All right. We began a parable last week found in Luke 14. We want to finish looking at that one today. Luke 14. Tell you what, we can learn so much from these parables. I mean, they just, they're stories that stick in our mind. And because they stick in our mind, what they teach stick in our minds. And that's why Jesus taught this way. This parable is about taking the lowly place. Found in Luke chapter 14, beginning in verse 7. And we'll go back and read it because I know it's been a week. So, verse 7, Luke 14. So he told a parable to those who were invited when he noted how they chose the best places. Remember, before I go on, remember that the practice back then was to have this U-shaped type table or series of tables, and there were seats of honor, we might call them, where usually it would be in the middle of each section. And what Jesus was seeing here were people kind of vying for those positions. In other words, they wanted the seat of honor. They wanted to be the most honorable one. And so it was kind of like that game where people circle chairs and with music playing, and when it stops, everybody scrambles for a chair. That's almost like what was going on here with trying to get these special seats. So Jesus sees that, and of course he knows why they're doing it. You know, pride, arrogance. And so, thus the parable. When you're invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, give place to this man, and then you begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you're invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, go up higher. Then you'll have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. I'll give you kind of another example. This happened last night at the Wiener Roast get-together with me. We were having our hayride, and Carl drives, you know, his four-door cab or his truck and drives it around, and So I usually get in there with him. So I got in the back seat, the less honorable place, because you know they put the less honorable people in the back seat. So I got there, and David or Lynn was going to sit in the front seat, okay, because I knew they were much more honorable than me. Well, they didn't come, so Carl asked me to move up to the front seat, and I felt honored, okay? So this is kind of a present day application of what was being seen. Of course, what Jesus saw, he knew there were some serious problems with the people. He saw some very serious problems with these people and what was going on. Because he could read their hearts, you know, he could read their minds, he knew what was motivating them, and he knew why they wanted those particular seats. Because they wanted to appear to be more honored. So again, it was about pride, it was about arrogance, and the whole point, as he mentions there in verse 11, is whoever exalts himself. It's not wrong to be exalted, it's wrong when you exalt yourself. And that's what he was pointing at. I'm sorry, yes.
There's nothing wrong with being proud of things we do, but we don't have to get up on the hilltop and shout it to the world.
That's right. Look what I've done. That's right.
Yeah. It's nice to feel good inside, but yeah. We don't have to shove it on everybody else.
Yeah. And that's what these were doing. Because again, he could tell what was driving them. He could tell that. And they wanted people to think that they were more honorable, that they were the elite. That's what they were wanting. So when he says, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled. So again, it's not about being exalted as much as it is about you exalting yourself and you thinking you're so much better and that you're so much more honorable and that you should be exalted because you're just better than everybody else. You've done more things, you've whatever. So you start thinking that. See, it's all about attitude. But the one, he says, who humbles himself, who doesn't, you know, put himself on a pedestal above everybody else, who doesn't think that he or she is better than everyone else, will be exalted. And it's amazing when I was looking through this lesson how much the Bible talks about this, Old and New Testament. I mean, it is a very common theme throughout the Bible. I mean, you just go from Genesis to Revelation, you see countless references, either specific instruction, directions about it, or examples about it. And what pride and arrogance can do for a person, how it can bring them down. And we'll look at a few of those this morning. So it must be one of those temptations that a lot of people fall for. Since the Bible addresses it so much, it must be a problem. And so it must be something then that we, since we're all humans, that we have to be on the alert. When Satan starts, you know, dangling the little hook in front of us that's got, you know, that pride and arrogance on the end of it, we have to make sure we don't bite it. Because apparently it looks very delicious. People want to be above other people. They want to be more honored. All right? And they apparently want to do it themselves. Let's go back or forward to Luke 18 for a moment. Just a few pages on over. We'll look at this parable later, so I don't want to talk a lot about it now, but Luke 18, beginning in verse 9, also he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Now there's the attitude. There's the attitude. They despised others because they thought they were so much more righteous. Sometimes we call this self-righteous. That's what they were. And here's the example he gives. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all I possess, and the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. And notice, this is the same expression. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And this was a real problem with the Pharisees overall, was the idea of being self-righteous. They thought they were better than everyone for the reason that they kept all these, what they you might think of as details. Remember in Matthew 23, he talks about them being hypocrites because they would tithe, you know, if they grew herbs, well, they would give a tenth to them. But they forgot about how important it was to love their fellow man. So they grew these herbs and tithed them, which was good. That was a good thing to do. But for some reason, they thought despising others was okay as long as they tithed every little thing they grew. And so it was attitude again, yes.
And that was a big problem for the whole Jewish thing, the children of Israel, because they, you know, they were always better than the Gentiles, the heathen, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they always felt. And their attitude is a lot like created their own problems they had anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Very true. And the Pharisees seemed to be one of the worst kind of subgroups of them because of that. They would, remember that it talks about how they would go around in the marketplace and they wanted everybody to say, oh, look how great he is, look how religious he is, look how spiritual he is. And Jesus, you know, had his probably most scathing remarks to the scribes and Pharisees. The so-called religious people of the day got the brunt end of a lot of his comments. In all four accounts of the gospel, he really lays into them on many occasions. And a lot of it goes back to pride and arrogance. Yes.
And which group was the most to reject Christ? Was it the scribes and the Pharisees?
Yeah, absolutely. And so while they outwardly appeared to be very righteous, they really weren't righteous. They were self-righteous, which is the exact opposite of being righteous. Those are just poles apart. So no wonder, like in this account there in Luke 18, the difference between these two people. See, one was a tax collector who was, you know, despised by a lot of people for what they did. But he knew he had the right attitude and heart. And when he addressed God, he didn't go tell God how wonderful he was. He didn't tell God how great he did, you know, with this and how much he did of that. He didn't have that attitude at all. His was rather, be merciful to me, a sinner. He knew he couldn't earn God's favor by doing those things. See, the Pharisees did. A lot of the things the Pharisees did were good, like tithing and all that. That was good. That was things they were supposed to do. But they thought it really earned them something, that God owed them something. So they had this this attitude that they didn't have to love their neighbor. They didn't have to do these things, but as long as they kept these outward things, God owed them something. And that was one of the things Jesus pointed out time and time again. No, God doesn't owe you. You're a sinner just like the tax collector. And of course they were. And in many ways they were worse because they were self-righteous. Speaking of that place in Matthew 23, let's just read one account there. Matthew 23. Would someone read verses 6 through 12? Matthew 23, verses 6 through 12. Through 11. I'm sorry, 12.
Neither be ye called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted.
Notice how often Christ uses that expression? He uses it many times in those four accounts of the gospel. Again, I think because it could lead to so many problems. It was so enticing for people to do that. But it's also a problem in the Old Testament, and it's addressed. Let me give a couple of places. Someone look up Proverbs 16:18, and then someone look up Proverbs 29:23, and then Proverbs 8:13. So Proverbs 16:18, Proverbs 29:23, and Proverbs 8:13.
Proverbs 16:18.
Yes.
Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before
nothing. Okay, next.
A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. That's Proverbs 29:18.
Yep. And then 8:13. Notice how all of those three things talk about how pride, how arrogance leads to some type of destruction, some type of condemnation. I mean, if you have that spirit or attitude, pride and arrogance is going to lead you down in so many different ways. And it's a problem. It can be a serious problem for us if we're not careful. It defiles us. Let's turn to Mark chapter 7. Beginning in verse 20, Mark chapter 7, beginning in verse 20. says, this is Jesus talking again, what comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within and out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile a man. Look at what pride is lumped in with. Some of those things we think is pretty horrible, don't we? Well, he puts pride right in there in that same group. And he says, where does it start? Inside, yes. Puffed up. I like that. I think King James sometimes uses that term, puffed up. I think it's the idea of kind of sticking our chest out because of what we've done or how good we are. Or,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. So it is something that is very serious. Okay, later on in the New Testament, let's go to James chapter 4. Would someone read James chapter 4, verse 6. James chapter 4, verse 6.
And he gives a greater grace, therefore it says, God opposed the proud, but gave grace to the humble.
God opposes the proud, resists the proud, is against the proud. But instead, he gives grace to those who show humility.
Bobby, the verse right after that, submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So apparently that pride and the devil go hand
in hand. Yeah, if we think that God owes us something because we're so good and better than other people, boy, that's an invitation for Satan, isn't it? That's just an invitation for Satan. And I think we become very susceptible to his temptations when we start thinking that we are better than everyone, and that we do have pride and arrogance and we're puffed up. We're an easy target for Satan. That's probably why those are together. Similarly, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5 uses the same expression. It says, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you, be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. See, there's the order. You're supposed to humble yourselves. God will do the exalting at the appropriate time. It is not for you to exalt yourself. That's God's business, he says. That's God's job, not ours. He will exalt us. Our job is to be submissive. Yes.
Right on down there, verse 8. Sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion, so he might devour.
That's right. Again, we make we're easy prey for Satan when we're not being submissive, when we're not being humble. Satan can really trap us easily because we're thinking we're so good. Haven't you ever seen that in sports teams? You know, they think they're really, really good and they don't prepare for some team they think's kind of pitiful. And it'll happen. They'll get knocked out. So that same thing is true here with Satan. You know, we start thinking that we are so great and spiritual and mighty that he can't do anything to us, then that's when he will get us, definitely. All right, a little bit further on over, 1 John chapter 2. Would someone read those verses 15 through 17? 1 John 2, verses 15 through 17.
That are in the world. If any man loves the world, he loves the Father that is not in him.
For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever.
Notice what he puts there in verse 16. The pride of life. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous thing to have. Because all of that's passing away. In other words, someone that pursues the flesh, the lust of the flesh, eyes, the pride of life, that person is not of the Father. But rather, it says that person is of the world. Again, very dangerous. Colossians chapter 3. I really like this verse. This is wonderful. Colossians chapter 3, verse 12. Someone want to read that for us? Colossians 3, verse 12.
Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering.
Isn't that wonderful? It's like you're being clothed. You're putting on these, and it becomes a part of you. It's actually part of you, so that you do have these tender mercies, and you do exhibit kindness, you exhibit humility, meek, long-suffering. He says you do that because you're the elect of God, you're holy and beloved. Holy people are not arrogant people. Arrogant people are not holy people.
That's also in the form of a command.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. If we're really going to, as the section's about, put on the new man that he talks about, this new man is one that's humble, not arrogant, or full of pride, or full of self-righteousness. Not like that at all in any way. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3, back a few pages. Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 3, says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others." What do people who are proud and arrogant do? They're not concerned about other people. I mean, you have to be concerned about yourself, as he says in verse 4, but not just yourself. You have to be concerned about other people. How are they doing? You know, what's happening to them? Do they need something? Whatever. So, we're not to let anything be done, period, because of selfishness, because of pride. But instead, just the opposite. Lowliness of mind. In humility, do that. Oh, yes.
Yeah, in a sense, that's what Ananias and Sapphira was guilty of, that right there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They were doing a showing card. Yeah. They were proud of what they gave, even though they lied about what they did.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was a compounded sin. They just kept compounding one on top of the other.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that example, but that's an excellent example of what he's talking about. It sure is. Okay, and the very last one we'll look at, our time's about out. 2 Timothy chapter 2, beginning in verse 25. "And a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, and patient. In humility, correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance so that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will." That section talks about the kind of servants and workers we're supposed to be. And one of the things is, we're to correct those in opposition, but if you want to be effective, you can't be proud and arrogant when you do it. If you're going to be effective, if it's going to do any good, you have to show humility. And you have to do it. It's not that you can get out of not correcting, but it's how you do it that's so important. So you must do it, but you also must do it in the right way or with the right attitude. So a phenomenal study about humility and arrogance. It's obviously something we all have to be very concerned about. Thank you very much.